Well, please join me in welcoming Victor to the weekly pickle seminar. Welcome to everyone who's online. I've known Victor a while now, like 4 minutes. Apologies if I miss anything in the introduction, but you're an undergrad, right?
Yes.
Undergrad, sitting on the third floor of IQC. QI, is that your organization?
Mm-hmm. Quantum Attraction.
Very cool. I really love your logo. We've all read this paper. We love it. We can't wait to hear about it. Take it away. Oh, are you mic'd up? Sorry.
I have to use my...
Yep.
It works, right? Oh, okay.
Because that it gets recorded, right?
Yes.
Empiricism.
I think it works.
Good.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, thanks very much for the info, Roger. Thanks a lot for inviting me to this PICO seminar talk. Today I'll talk about a new neural network-based tomography protocol called NeuroShadow Quantum State Tomography. I did this work with my supervisor when I was an undergrad at McGill, Professor Bill Koish, and Puya, who's at IQC MPI. Also running 1-qubit, and Christine, who's my current supervisor at IQC. So before I get started, I just want to mention that I'm a big fan of PICO's works. I started work on neural quantum states a few years ago, and I've read most of PICO's work, including Physics of Matter to tomography, and also using machine learning to investigate ground state properties, and many more. And those work also inspired both people using theoretical frameworks to try to see if there are any guarantees for those methods, as well as applying those toolboxes to, say, experimental platforms like quantum simulators, basically exploring applications. And today in particular, I'll talk about tomography. And trust me, a background introduction will have lots of PICO's works. So this is an overview. I will start with introduction to neural network quantum state tomography, which maybe surprisingly will lead to classical shadow formalism. And then I'll talk about the new protocol, neural shadow quantum state tomography. I also like to call it NSQST in comparison to ANQST. Then I'll talk about advantages of NSQST over NQST for time-evolved states. Following that, this is something new that's not in the preprint yet, but I'll discuss some scalable advantages of NSQST over direct shadow estimation. So what happens if we have like an onset, like a model-based approach, as compared to just using the data to predict stuff. After that, I'll talk about the noise robustness property of the protocol. And in the end, I'll talk about the experimental prospects and possible future directions. And feel free to interrupt me anytime during my talk, and I'll be happy to answer any questions. So just to motivate a bit, quantum state tomography is a very important toolbox for verifying experimentally prepared quantum states. Because once you prepare some states, you want to make sure that you actually prepare the correct state. And full quantum state tomography, since it requires you to specify an exponential number of parameters, you also need an exponential number of measurements. It is generally hard. to perform like a full quantum state tomography. So it is becomes unfeasible for larger quantum systems. And this is it's a problem. At the same time, we can also find other methods to verify the quantum states. And this leads to the first work from Pico I'll talk about. The neural network quantum state tomography with superior state onsets. This is a paper from 2018 by mostly Pico people. This neural network quantum state tomography does is that it uses the neural network onsets to represent the quantum state. And then since the variational onsets only has a polynomial number of parameters, you can avoid the exponential number of parameters in the full quantum state tomography case. And the figure I'm showing is a benchmarking example for the W state, the target state here, where you can see the neural network quantum state tomography with superior state onsets captures both probability distribution as well as the relative phases. And just to note that the relative phase here is actually very important because in contrast to classical probability distribution where you only have real numbers for each basis, the quantum state, each amplitude is a complex number, and you have to keep track of the relative phase of each complex valued amplitude. So just to look into the details of the protocol of NKSD training, so there are two parts, as I talked about. First part is the probability, and the second part is the relative phase. So the probability distribution can be learned from just measuring the quantum state, because every time you measure a bit string, you're actually sampling from the probability distribution. And using method from classical machine learning, you can define some likelihood loss function. Learning probability in the classical setting, you can learn the probability of the quantum state using the same loss function. The thing that's tricky is learning the relative phases, because if you only perform direct measurements without any basis transformation, then you have no information about the relative phases. You only know the probability distribution. And so to learn those relative phases, you have to measure in rotated basis. So what ANQSD does is that in this log likelihood loss function, not only do does loss function have the training set of the loss function have measurement data in the computational basis from direct measurements, it also has measurements from rotated basis, and those rotated basis, non-diagonal basis, will provide information about the relative phases. And then what you do is that you sum over those likelihood terms. Just to note that in this loss function, there's an important term here, which is this p phi as a function of s, the bit string, and the basis b, where if your basis is not diagonal, you actually have to compute this this amplitude term. As you can see, you have to keep track of all the bit strings that has non-zero overlap. And this can be hard if the basis b is not nearly diagonal, which I'll get into it. So the question here is that we have an exponential number of poly bases to choose from, having all of them will guarantee that we have enough information to recover the relative phases, but we definitely cannot have chosen an exponential number of them because it won't make the protocol scalable. The question is, how do we choose the poly basis to measure from? And this goes to the second part of NQSD training, which is choosing the basis to perform measurements. And there are two important points here. The first point is that the chosen set of bases should be informationally complete. So what that means is that the chosen set of bases, when you perform measurements on them, they should provide you enough information to uniquely identify the target state of interest. And an example for this is if the prepared state is a unique ground state. When I mean unique, I mean there's no degeneracy. In other words, the ground state and the first excited state, there's a non-zero gap there. You know what the Hamiltonian is. And then what do you do? You can choose the Hamiltonian's polystrings as bases and perform measurements on them and use them to reconstruct your state. And that will give you an informationally complete set of bases. And the intuition behind that is because imagine when you're trying to find the ground state of a Hamiltonian, give them polystrings, you get measurements from them, all the information you need is from the polystrings of the Hamiltonian. And the second important point is that the chosen basis set should be nearly diagonal. So what this means is that your poly base should have few x or y terms because x and y are non-diagonal poly matrices. And this is necessary because if you remember from the loss function from last slide, when you compute this amplitude term and you have to sum over the non-zero overlap between the vector S and B and your neural network quantum state, you have to make sure that you only have to sum over a constant or a few number of bit strings that has non-zero overlap. And as an example, for the W state studied in the first neural network quantum state tomography paper. The bases chosen are the following set, where as you can see, there are only like two-body non-diagonal poly matrices in the chosen bases, and the rest of them are Z is the diagonal poly matrix, so it doesn't have this issue. And for the W state in particular, the chosen set of bases are actually informationally complete for the W state. So after training, another important point is what can an NQST predict after it's been trained? And in this slide, I'll focus on poly observables and fidelity to another state. So first, for poly observables, what you can do is that what people have done is that you can use this local estimator defined here, as OL, and then simply collect samples from the neural network quantum state onsets, where you can see you're summing over the sigma prime term, where there's a fraction of amplitudes, and this O sigma prime, where for a single poly observable, the number of sigma prime you have to sum over is actually constant or definitely not exponential. And more importantly, the variance of this local estimator is actually constant for a poly observable, independent of system size or the observable weight. I'll talk more about observable weight later, but in other words, if your neural quantum state is trained and you want to predict some poly observable, the number of classical samples, the classical post-processing cost, is actually constant, independent of system size, the number of samples you need to predict a particular poly observable. This is good. And for fidelity to another state, you can do a similar trick, and you can define an estimator as fraction of the amplitudes, where those amplitudes can be calculated exactly for the neural quantum state onsets with constant variance. Some proofs about this constant variance thing can be found in this recent paper here. Once a neural quantum state is trained, you can predict arbitrary polyobservable or fidelity to another state with constant classical resources or polynomial with a small exponent. So that was a linear function. What about nonlinear function? An important nonlinear function of interest is Rennie entropy, especially Rennie 2 entropy. So this general expression for Rennie entropy, in this case where alpha equals 2, if you are interested in this quantity, then you can grab the swap operator, where given the partition of the system into two parts, two subsystems, and you can evaluate this swap operator. You can, using the proof techniques from the previous slide, you can also show that estimating the swap operator has bounded variance independent of the subsystem size. So this is important because when you partition your system into two parts, if you partition them into quite evenly, then that's most challenging case usually. But if you partition them into a small part and a fairly large part, then it's generally easier. But if you have a neural quantum state, this swap operator actually has a bounded variance, and this recent paper from Pico, it's the autoregressive neural network quantum state paper, they actually have this figure showing that with like this perfect sampling from autoregressive model, you can actually evaluate the Rennie 2 entropy of arbitrary partitions very efficiently, as large as 80 spins. As you can see, the error bars are so small. So that's just a direct verification of how, if you have a neural quantum state, you can predict this Rennie 2 entropy efficiently with very few classical resources. So now is time to transition into another recent work as a revised protocol of NQST with mixed state onsets. Also how this somewhat leads to classical shadow formalism. So as we talked about, it is generally hard to choose a set of informationally complete basis for NQST. Can we avoid this basis selection issue by pushing everything to a single probability distribution? So this paper in 2018 attempted this. Basically, everything was pushed to a neural network quantum state encoding a classical probability distribution. And some extra processing needs to be done when one wants to predict some observables, relying on the on an invertible overlap matrix. So you actually have to invert this overlap matrix to predict observables of interest. And the nice part of this is that the training data is a set of informationally complete from an information complete POVM. In other words, it avoids a problem of choosing a set of bases by relying on this information complete POVM. But the issue is that it gets hard when you want to predict observables that are non-local, such as fidelity. But as you can see, the figure here, if you're looking for local observables, even at large system size, it does a very good job. Yeah. Yeah, so as I've mentioned, one of the issue of this mixed state and QSD, where everything was pushed to classical probability distribution, was that it has hard time predicting like quantum fidelity. And the figure I'm showing here is actually from the first classical shadow paper, where they studied an NQSD compared to shadows at small system size. When they're showing this fidelity estimator for NQSD, since it's challenging to estimate fidelity, quantum fidelity to another state, they use this classical fidelity as an upper bound of the quantum fidelity. For shadows, they evaluate the quantum fidelity instead. And as you can see, when there's a phase error of this noisy GHZ state, this mixed state NQSD's classical fidelity does not really reflect the phase error as well, even at small system size. So this directly leads to classical shadow formalism, which I'll also introduce today. To as an attempt to further explore the boundaries of tomography from a theoretical perspective, without having a model there. Any questions? So now we're into the classical shadow formalism, and unlike model-based mixed state NQSD or pure state NQSD protocol, in the mixed state particular, we have to rely on this inverse overlap matrix, where when we predict the observable, we have to rely on this inversion process. So classical shadow formalism basically instead inverts every randomized measurement snapshot using an analytically derived inverted quantum channel. So what's different here is that what classical shadow does is that it uses a set of random random unitaries, and every time it samples one random unitary, apply it to the prepared quantum state, and then measure it only once. So take a single measurement. So after this single measurement, what you get is first this U, the sampled random unitary, and then this B bit string that's measured out of the state, and you pair them up, and you call this the classical shadow. You can analytically derive the kind of inverted the quantum channel to invert in order to recover the density matrix in the limit of a large number of samples. But what you can do is that once you invert this and you call this a classical shadow, you can, without using a model like a neural network, you can directly use it to predict observables of interest. And the way they're trying to see how many samples you need is to check the variance bound of this small OI estimator. And they called it this like a shadow norm at the bottom here. So in other words, if by bounding the variance of this estimator, you can have an idea of how many samples do you need to estimate particular observables of interest. And as you can see, this shadow norm would depend on two major things. One is the observable of interest, and the other part is the what kind of unitary ensemble, what kind of random basis you choose to execute this classical shadow protocol. So in the first classical shadow paper, there were two protocols introduced, the Pauli shadows and the Clifford shadows. For the poly shadow, what you do is you measure in randomized poly basis, to measure in a particular poly base, you only need single qubit gates for each qubit, and that's more experimentally friendly. And turns out this poly shadow is ideal for local poly observable with this variance bound of 4 to the power of the locality of this of the observable of interest. So local observables such as like the spin observable of a particular site, you also have efficient classical post processing for poly observables. Then it also introduces Clifford shadows, where you you measure in randomized Clifford bases, and to implement this random unitary, you need a quadratic number of entangling gates or C knots, and this could be experimentally challenging. This Clifford shadow is ideal for low rank observables, such as fidelity. With a variance bound of 3 times the trace of O squared. You can imagine if this O is some outer product of pure state, and you square it and take the trace of it, it's just 1. So the variance bound is just 3 if your observable is some pure state outer product. And it has efficient classical post-processing with actually only stabilizer states. So it's the classical post-processing part of predicting fidelity with Clifford shadows. It's only efficient when your target state is a stabilizer state. And just note that experimentally, there are also other ways to benchmarking fidelities of stabilizer states. By just measuring the stabilizers, the known stabilizers. And for nonlinear functions, poly shadows can be used to efficiently predict Rani 2 entropy, but only with small subsystem size. So what this means is that for Rani entropy, from previous slide, if you partition your system quite evenly, such that your subsystem size is not a constant, but some number of comparable to the system size, then poly shadows actually cannot predict it, has no guarantee for poly shadows to predict efficiently with bounded variance. If you remember, neural quantum state, once it's successfully trained, it can be used to predict Rani 2 entropy of arbitrary partitions. Another note is that neither poly or Clifford shadows are guaranteed to efficiently predict high-weight poly observables. So what I mean by high-weight is that if I have a poly observable written in poly strings, the weight of this observable is basically the number of non-identity poly matrix in the poly string. So if your poly observable is high-weight, then neither poly or Clifford shadows could have guarantees for efficiently predicting it. So after introducing classical shadow formalism and previous works on NQST by Pico people, so the question is there any ways to combine NQST and classical shadows? When I started this project, I was looking online to see if anyone has done anything similar. And the only thing, the closest thing I could find is this, it's the APS March meeting thing where people have attempted to use, to combine NNQSD and classical shadows in the sense where they're trying to using machine learning method to augment the classical shadow data in order to have an advantage. So I decided to take a different approach. So what I did is that I attempted to train neural network quantum state with classical shadows. And in particular, just for numerical experiments, I I used Clifford Shadows to begin with as training data and an autoregressive model, a Snow quantum state from this paper of neural error mitigation from one of my co-authors. So as you can see, the figure on the right is a comparison of NQSD and SQSD, where, first of all, in the quantum part, I use the Clifford shadows with where the random unitary is appended after the prepared state, and I take a measurement after that. And the data I have for training the neural quantum state is no longer the many shots from a particular set of bases in the case of an NQSD, but a set of classical shadow data, and then attempt to train my neural quantum state with the collected classical shadow data here. So what's the loss function for as I call it neural shadow quantum state tomography or NSQST? Is we use an infidelity-based loss function, where the infidelity is approximated by a set of Clifford shadows. So if you remember from the previous slide on the properties of Clifford shadows, they're efficient at predicting observables such as fidelity. So what I did is that I just take infidelity as a loss function, this infidelity can be approximated by the collected Clifford shadows, and I know that to have bounded variance on my infidelity estimate, I only have to measure a constant number of Clifford shadows, even at large system size. And in the noises case, I'll talk about the rule of noise here later, but for now, in the noise, assuming there's no noise present, the Clifford shadows would take the expression of this like this, and the loss function here, in the noises case, would just be a sum of overlaps to the sampled Clifford shadows, and this phi I, I forgot to put an extra note here, but the phi is just the random unitary and the bit string here, and And one note that which I'll discuss later for sure is that so you have this loss function, but you actually cannot compute this exactly when the system size is large. It's actually one of the issues with Clifford shadows post a classical post-processing. I'll discuss it later, but let's first approximate it using Monte Carlo method, and we tried it on small systems just for now. To just see if it actually works, we'll just use a new set of Clifford shadows in every iteration to avoid overfitting. So in other words, every iteration, when I make a gradient update, I sample a set of Clifford shadows, and then I get the gradient from there. Before getting into the numerical results, I'll also discuss a variant protocol with pre-training. So this NSQS with pre-training is basically a revised protocol where I first use the strategies from NNQSD or the classical machine learning method to learn like a classical probability distribution from the quantum state with no information about the relative phases using the log likelihood loss function. And then I collect the classical shadows from the, again, from the prepared state to learn the relative phases. You can also see it as some coordinate descent method where this pre-training step is kind of constraining the search space when you before you go into the second step of learning relative faces. And we'll see its advantage, the advantage of having this pre-training in numerical experiments. So getting to numerical experiments, and this part is about advantages of an SQST over NQST for time-evolved states at small system size. So here, I'm using an example, a work that I was involved in, of simulating lattice gauge theory using trotterized time evolution, where I'm trying to perform tomography on the time-evolved state and compare performance of NQST with an SQST, as well as the variant of NSQST with pre-training. And just through the stats here, NQST is trained on 21 nearly diagonal measurement bases, where I included all the possible two-body, where there's non-diagonal basis on like nearest neighbor two-body, two-body in the poly strings for measurements. And for each poly base, I took 512 shots. On the other hand, in SQSD is trained on using 100 Clifford shadows per iteration. But we'll see later, the resource can actually be saved more. But for now, we'll just see if it actually works. So
for, I just want to understand this.
Yeah.
So NNQSD is trained on a different set of data than NSQSD.
Yeah, correct, yes.
Sorry. You can also take the shadow,
yeah,
the classical shadow data,
yeah,
and just train with the original loss function, right?
Yeah, log likelihood loss function, right? Yeah, so.
So, okay. You seem like you anticipated that question.
Yeah, so. Yeah, so
what's your answer to my non-question?
Oh. Yeah, so I thought about it for a while. So yes, if you have this log likelihood loss function, you can actually do the same thing where you compute the amplitude as the overlap between the neural quantum state and the state by their state you have sampled from, right? And when you sum over the log terms, right? When you sum the logs, it's actually equivalent as multiplying them, as assuming they're, do you see what I mean? Like,
no, I didn't catch it.
Like, so in the log likelihood loss function of NQSD, you're summing a bunch of log likelihoods. And when you sum a bunch of logs, log plus log plus log, by the property of log, you're actually multiplying those things together because you're summing independent. So there, in the loss function of NSQST, it's we're actually not multiplying them, and then take the log. We're actually summing them. So it's actually something. I wasn't able to find a classical interpretation of what the meaning of summing them, like just summing the probabilities instead of like multiplying them up. But yeah, like in terms of numerical experiments, no, I've never tried using the log likelihood loss function. Another thing is that if the log likelihood loss function is used, the noise robustness property may not be holden, as we'll see later. The noise robustness property, yeah. Yeah, I mean, from an optimization perspective, if you just take a log of it, I think it can still work. But no, I've never tried. No, yeah. Yeah, thanks for the question. And so for this example, we have this figure where we did 10 trials and checked the average final infidelity, exact infidelities. As you can see, the NQST protocol, the final infidelity is, the final infidelity is very close to one, which means that it didn't do a good job of capturing the state, at least in the quantum fidelity metric sense. For NSQST and NSQST pre-training, the final infidelity is much smaller, which means that at least in this quantum metric, quantum fidelity metric is doing a good job capturing the target state. So besides just quantum fidelity, what we checked is what we also checked is observable prediction. So the observable we have here is this kinetic energy Hamiltonian from lattice gauge theory. As you can see, this observable is, first of all, relatively non-local, also non-diagonal from the Pauli plus and Pauli minus terms. In other words, when you're estimating this observable, the expectation value, the non-diagonal Pauli terms will require you to have information the relative phases in order to correctly predict it. And as you can see here, when we use the trained neural quantum state for an NQST as compared to NSQST and the one with pre-training, from the exact value, NQST wasn't able to predict it well. The panel C is about the loss functions, whereas you can see the log likelihood loss function for an NQST has converged with all the 21 nearly diagonal measurement basis data, but its infidelity using the quantum fidelity metric has not really converged to a value close to zero, whereas also many fluctuations exist in the loss function of NSQST and NSQST's pre-training, because I'm only using the 100 Clifford shadow spray duration, so the variance is actually quite high. But you see the exact infidelity actually converged very quickly, and especially for the version with pre-training, and did a pretty good job. So the question is, why did NQST fail? So as we know before, for only the probability, you just have to,
previous slide, just for reference, is this trace of Hkin squared like a large or a small number for 6-qubit observables?
Like the expectation value, is it large or small?
Like, is the expected variance for this observable with respect to the Shatter's protocol, is that like a large variance dimension?
Yeah. So, you can always have some variance bound of the 4 to the power of like locality of the observable. So here is a 4-body observable.
This is Clifford Shatter.
You're talking about Clifford shadows. Yes, we'll have comparison to direct shadow estimation very soon, but just to foreshadow a bit, maybe. So for Clifford shadows, it is not efficient for any Pauli observable. I cannot say not efficient, but no guarantees for it being efficient for any Pauli observable. Yeah, because the variance bound is, remember, trace O squared. So arbitrary Pauli observable, if you square it, it's just identity, 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 identity. As you can imagine, it's a huge diagonal matrix with one on the diagonal.
Yeah.
And when you sum over it, as taking the trace, you're just summing over an exponential number of ones.
Right, and that's what I was asking.
Yeah.
So, like, you're using the subroutine from Clifford shadows to gather data.
Yeah.
But this observable you're gathering your data for has like pretty high rank.
Yeah.
And so, but it still seems to give you a good convergence.
Yeah, we'll see later. This actually will be the important point of when we show the advantages over direct shadow estimation. Yeah, when the model-based approach is used.
Sweet.
Thanks. So yeah, why did NNQSD fail? As we talked about, if you only have direct measurements in the computational basis, you get the probability distribution very well. But when you're trying to know something about the relative phases, you have to measure non-diagonal observables. So if you only have nearly diagonal ones, a subset of them, then it's not guaranteed that you can actually have enough information to learn the relative phases. Despite, as you can see before, the log likelihood loss function has converged in the NNQSD protocol. On the other hand, if you have this infidelity loss function, it can uniquely identify the state with minimal infidelity. So if you don't capture relative phases well and your observable is a non-diagonal observable, you could be facing this issue of predicting this observable accurately. As we remember, the kinetic energy Hamiltonian is clearly non-diagonal. So when your relative phases are incorrect, it can lead to incorrect observable prediction. In the previous case, we saw that NQS didn't work well for this fairly non-local, non-diagonal observable of the kinetic energy Hamiltonian. It actually still works for some local observables. And this is an example of a time-evolved state from anti-ferromagnetic Heisenberg model. A similar result is shown here, where NQSD has the highest infidelity in the quantum metric. But despite having the higher final infidelity, the NQSD protocol actually does a good job predicting staggered magnetization, which is a local but non-diagonal observable. As you can see in panel B, despite NSQSD having the much lower infidelity in the quantum metric, the NQSD protocol actually does a clearly better job at predicting the staggered magnetization. And this is because the observable here is a nearly diagonal observable, which is very closely related to the training data used for training NQSD. So the important thing to remember here is that although NQSD did not reconstruct the target state well in the quantum metric sense, if it's trained on the nearly diagonal data, then there's a high hope that it still does a good job at predicting observables of the similar kind, such as this nearly diagonal staggered magnetization observables. So now there's some new numerical experiments, not including the preprint yet, but will be soon. Advantages over direct shadow estimation of an NSQSD. So the important question to ask here is, okay, we've shown that NSQSD has advantages over NQSD, but does it offer any advantages over direct shadow estimation? In other words, if you have a model here, does it actually perform anything better than just using the data, but no models involved? So we start with a small system size, 6 qubits, the lattice gauge theory model. And we also make two small changes to reduce the number of measurements for NSQSD with pre-training, because when you want to compare your performance with direct shadow estimation, since the classical shadow is an unbiased estimator, the key thing to look for is how many measurements you need. The two improvements here, one is reuse the Clifford shadows instead of remeasuring in every iteration. And then And then there's an extra trick done for reduce a classical post-processing error in the loss function, the Monte Carlo step. For the figure on the right, 1,000 direct measurements for pre-training is 1,000 direct measurements are used for pre-training of an SQSD, and 200 Clifford shadows, not every iteration, but just those 200, are used for learning the relative phases. And then for the shadow, for the direct shadow estimation, both Clifford and Pauli, 1,200 Clifford, 1,200 measurements are used. And as you can see, for kinetic energy, an SQSD's pre-training clearly has a smaller error. Also for fidelity error in SQSD's pre-training also wins. And the interesting one is the panel C, where, as you can see, we're just picking an observable of XXXX and gradually increasing the weight of the observable. In other words, we're trying to make the observable non-local and see how the errors for each protocol changes. As expected from the variance bound, the Clifford shadows maintains the high error for observables of arbitrary weights. And the Pauli shadows has error increasing as the weight of the observable increasing. Whereas for NSQSD's pre-training, you can see the error almost is constant up to 5 and the small increase when it comes to 6. So it's a small system. And then another question is this advantage scalable? Even just maybe scalable for some states. So what we did is that we tried on this phase shifted JHZ state, where the phase shift is pi over 2. So it is still a stabilizer state. And we could run numerical experiments of large system size. We fixed the number of measurements and check the final infidelity. We also predict one of the target state stabilizers as system size grows. Here we use 3,000 direct measurements and 200 Clifford shadows as compared to 3,200 Clifford shadows. As you can see, as system size increases, there's not a significant increase in the final infidelity. Almost it's constant, and like no significant change. And for the stabilizer observable in particular, you see the Clifford shadows just very quickly fails to predict anything close to the exact value, whereas our protocol still correctly predicts the exact value. Finally, about noise robustness. This was foreshadowed before, but if you go back to NSQSD's loss function, if there's a noise channel after the Clifford unitary, we can simply modify the shadow expression to account for it. Useful references here. And a stronger noise channel just leads to a stronger variance in the observable estimate. So what happens is that although the loss function will be biased, in other words, if there's noise present and you want to predict something like the infidelity, then your estimate will be biased due to the noise. If you just use the same expression for the shadow. We can actually estimate the strength of the noise channel with a calibration step. And if the strength of the noise is known, then we can correct this mistake for the loss function. And this is what this reference does. But what's more interesting is that despite the loss function being biased in the presence of a noise channel, the gradient actually remains unbiased, even if we know nothing about the noise channel. So no need for a calibration step for estimating the noise strength. the gradient will remain unbiased, despite the loss function being biased. And you can see from this figure here, the first one is an amplitude damping channel applied after all the random unitaries. And what happens here is that you see the estimated infidelity as a loss function just becomes biased as the noise channel strength increases. But the final exact infidelity just stays close to zero, verifying the noise robustness. So the noise channel illustrated in panel A can be something like a readout noise, say. But what's more important and interesting is what happens when you have noise within the random unitary, and the theory really doesn't guarantee anything. So we tried this one as well, where we have local depolarizing noise channel after every C naught in the random unitary. And as you can see, the noise strength is actually very, very large in panel B there, but you can see signs of noise robustness when the noise strength is moderate. So a few future prospects. The first one is to incorporate prior knowledge of the target state into the onsets. For example, many works have started to implement symmetries on those neural quantum states. Having symmetries imposed can basically shrink the search space when you perform this variational gradient search. The other thing is to reduce the classical post-processing problem with more constrained onsets. Remember I mentioned that NX2T suffers from the Clifford shadows classical post-processing issue. And the reason for the JHDAT state we're able to do a good job was because JHDAT state has a nice structure. Basically, there are two peaks. It's very sparse. And that's just ideal for our protocol. For general non-sparse states, the problem of pure state tomography is hard in from a theoretical point of view. So it's interesting to see if we have other types of onsets that's more constrained, or some constraints can be put into this protocol, even in the presence of this classical post-processing issue. Can we still study something interesting that's it's relevant to some applications? And third one is explore some hybrid training strategies with model-based approach. So another nice thing about this model-based approach is that you can actually get the model trained with multiple types of measurement data. And depends on the problem of interest. The model is it's like a bridge connecting all the various types of training data, and the fourth one is the using other types of randomized measurements. So in this protocol, we have shown mostly Clifford shadows being used as training data, but we all know the quadratic number of CNOT gates would render it being not experimentally feasible. Unlike the original shadow paper, classical shadow paper, where only the Pauli shadow and the Clifford shadows were introduced, there are actually more papers recently being published about other types of randomized measurements, some not as deep as Clifford, not as shallow as Pauli, and they each have their advantages. And some are more experimentally feasible, so those should be looked into. And the most important thing is to build in a practical tool for experimentalists. For instance, for the Clifford shadows, it's efficient for a stable other states, but we all know there are also other ways to benchmark prepare stable other states, for example. So it's very important to have a useful toolbox for experimentalists in the presence of hardware constraints. Yeah. And then there are more and more. I swapped the slides. But yeah, so this part is about experimental feasibility. So I just mentioned there's some works about using hardware-efficient randomized measurements where they can control the depths of the random circuit they use for performing the randomized measurements. Another thing is they can also use the Hamiltonian-driven shadow protocol. And so why this is important, you can imagine maybe some platforms have a hard time implementing those logic gates, like some simulator, quantum simulators, for example. But they're probably easier to, say, perform time evolution using the native interaction. So those should be looked into. I want to do some advertisements about another one of the work I've done recently, where what we did is that we extended the neural quantum state, the variation of Monte Carlo method with neural network quantum state to excited states using the penalty-based method. So many works I've done in the area of trying to get the ground state using the variational algorithm. So what we did is that we used a penalty-based method, basically the overlap term, and we're trying to get that excited states in the low-lying spectrum. And with those low-lying excited states, we're able to compute dynamics and that only involve the low-lying spectrum. The code is actually available and compatible with NetK utilities. We're trying to get the code also including the NetK library. I want to thank my co-authors, Vasbir Koish, for supporting me when I was doing the research at McGill to my undergrad. And Puya and Christine supported me at IQC remotely. I also had many useful discussions with people at IQC and PI, also people in Christine's quantum interactions group. I also really enjoyed the conference happened in the summer. The machine learning for quantum antibody systems, where I had lots of interesting discussions and got lots of inspirations from those discussions as well. So thanks, Christine, for supporting me to those two conferences, one at PI, one in Japan. Yeah. Thanks.
Okay. Questions?
Yeah.
Can you go back 4 slides?
This?
Oh, before this. That one. Forward. Okay, back one. Yeah, sorry. I'm trying to just understand the comparison. Like, what is a direct measurement here again?
Oh, direct measurements is measurements of computational basis. Just get the probability distribution.
Okay, but then you train the model to predict the all x's and y, all these strings.
I trained the neural quantum state to capture the JH that state. And as from previous slides, we know that once your neural quantum state is trained, you can actually use it to predict arbitrary poly observables of interest. I just use a sampling-based method, just sample, collect the samples, and then predict those poly observables. So it's actually interesting because those neural quantum states are physical. In other words, when you're sampling from them, you're actually just like measuring from a quantum device. And when you predict the stabilizer of the JH state, you're actually like, you can imagine when you're sampling from a physical distribution of the state, it's like a bit flip thing. It's a bit of abstract, but.
So the relationship between that specific observable is that's in like the support of the JH state. The JH state decomposes into a set of poly strings.
It's one of the stabilizers, yes.
But then you pick like any other observable that's the trade-off that wouldn't work for.
It will work. Yeah, because the reconstruction quality is good. The state has been reconstructed. We know, yeah.
Yeah, I just meant like if you pick up a string that has like a even number of y's in it, then you'll have
yeah.
no idea. Like what the
no, it will still accurately predict. Yeah, yeah. Because the important metric here is panel A, where the final fidelity stays very small. Another note is that the shadows are actually unphysical. As compared to what I've talked about, like imagine when you're performing direct measurements on the quantum device, you just rotate to the basis and just collect the statistics, right? The variance for arbitrary poly observable is like constant if you just do the physical measurements. But when you have shadows, which is unphysical, and you're trying to predict those observables, that's somewhat the source of its advantage in some cases, but also why it fails for some cases. Yeah.
Questions? Questions online? Does anyone? I got lots of questions for you, but I'm not going to make everyone sit through them. So,
yeah.
Why don't we call it there since we're over time? There's food. I don't know when the food starts downstairs, but don't miss it. And thanks, everyone, for joining, and let's thank Victor again.
Thanks.